So welcome, everybody. It's 2 o'clock. So we've got three speakers who I think are going to all want to take their 30 minutes. So we'll go ahead and get started so people can get to the break and get their food on time. So my name is Jeff Calvert. I'm with the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health. And this session is called the pesticide session, I guess. I guess it has a formal kind of kitschy, cute title. And we've got three great speakers, two great speakers, and maybe myself. I'm last, so you can leave get to that break early. But the first speaker is going to be Justine Weinberg, and she is with the California Department of Public Health Occupational Health Branch. She's an industrial hygienist, and I've known her for about 9 years. Great woman. It's been a pleasure knowing her. She always gives a great talk. And also I wanted to mention that, the summer solstice is going to occur during the session. So I want to welcome you, be the first to welcome you to summer. But without further ado, Justine, take it away. I guess I should state the title of your talk. She's going to be talking, the title of her talk is Preventing Pesticide Illness Due to Drift by Targeting Investigation and Outreach at Workplaces Encircled by Agricultural Fields.
Thank you, Jeff. And I apologize for the very long, ridiculous title. This project is one that we've nicknamed the Island Project or Industrial Islands, and neither of those names conjures up quite the right image, so I came up with a more descriptive title that just makes it more clear what we're talking about. So something about me, I love maps. I'm the kind of person that if I'm reading a book about a place, like a real place like London or Paris or wherever, New York, I like to have a map of it near me because I want to see where the people, where the places they're talking about, the streets they're talking about. So I think I came up with this project just so I can spend more time looking at locations. The program that I'm with is Occupational Pesticide Illness Prevention Program. We conduct surveillance of acute work-related pesticide illness. We use multiple data sources to gather this data. We also conduct investigations and try to do as much outreach as we can. Our activities are supported by NIOSH. So yeah, I love to look at maps, and I especially love Google Maps, satellite view. I think there's a wealth of information that you can get by looking at looking at a place. I like to see where I'm gonna be, where I'm at. I also like to look at locations to see what they're like. And this is Cincinnati NIOSH. There. So you can see it's a nice green kind of suburban area. That's not where you are? Okay. But it's, there's a lot of information you can gather from that. And so this project started, it was quite a few years ago, actually one of the first pesticide incidents that I investigated when I came to OHB was Merced County. It was some workers at an asphalt plant that were had an aerial application of sulfur drifted onto them from it was tomatoes that were being treated. And when I talked to the ag commissioner who investigated that as well, they said something about them being, surrounded by fields. And so I went and looked at about where they were. I'm not sure exactly where on this map they were located, but they were indeed surrounded by fields. And so, the chances of having something drift on them if there's pesticide applications are more than if they just bordered it or were, not right on the edge of a field. So I thought that was interesting. I thought, if this comes up again, I'd like to look into this some more. And a few years later, There have been other ones, but a few years later there was this one, in Santa Barbara County, an industrial park. Again, surrounded. This one's surrounded by berry fields, and berries are fumigated quite a bit using things like chloropicrin or 1,3-dichloropropene. And when this was investigated, I got the report from the Ag Commissioner on this one as well. One of the comments that they went to the neighboring locations, and so this is they work on construction equipment, and they work outdoors. And they became ill from an application of, I think it was an herbicide that was right on the edge of their property. Like somewhere over here was where the application was. But the Ag Commissioner went and visited all the other businesses that were on this little island in this industrial park. And they found out that within a 2-week period there were something like 13 applications in the area. And the people at these other locations said something like, yeah, we smell things all the time, and we have, last couple weeks ago we all had headaches. But they never reported it. So that kind of thing never makes it into our system or even Department of Pesticide Regulations system, because they just sort of put up with it. They don't think to report it. They don't know who to report it to, because they're not... A lot of farm workers, they are trained, and their employers are trained on what to do if they have pesticide illness, and they know that they need to report it. They need to get them to see doctors. So another type of business isn't necessarily going to know that. They don't have the training, and the employees especially don't know what to do, and they don't even necessarily report it to their own supervisors. So I thought that was an interesting observation made. So we started looking at our drift cases that were, drift from an agricultural application to a non-agricultural site, non-farm work site. Out of 539 drift cases, we had 14% that were drift onto a non-farm work site, with the most common health effects, very, typical of other ones we've seen, but headache, respiratory irritation, eye irritation, nausea, and shortness of breath. They're mostly low severity, and with a few moderate. One high severity case, there was a pregnant bus driver who was exposed to sulfur. And sulfur is the most used pesticide in California. And she was hospitalized, so it was a very severe. The industries are different than what, I think our other drift cases are. A lot of schools are out in the middle of nowhere. I have a couple pictures of them. Public administration, utilities. There's a lot of workers that are out fixing roads or light poles or doing other work out in the middle of agricultural counties. And so, what they're doing is routine work. They're not doing the applications. They're the ones doing other jobs. And some of them are emergency responders. So we took our data, and for this we didn't do cases, we did reports. We're just interested in what the exposures could be. John Beckman, who is our who keeps track of our data, does a lot of the surveillance work for us, presented this map a couple years ago at CESTE. And we had, so we just wanted to see on a map where they were located. And they did tend to cluster in high-use pesticide areas that we noticed. And what's cool about this map is that we can zoom in and add a narrative to the dots, and so we get more information from the map by being able to do that. So one of the dots. So I started looking at these dots individually, and one of them. So you can see. Here's the dot. And you can see that is surrounded. So there were three reports at this one location, and it was a case of drift. For a lot of these, I don't have the data, the information about what the pesticides were. It's just more about, looking at locations. This is an elementary school in Madera County. And when you zoom in on this, you can see, again, that it's completely surrounded by fields. But what's interesting about that is, all of the kids in this school have to come, none of them are near the school that they go to. and they have to travel through farmland. So we do actually get, we've got a few cases of buses being drifted on as they travel through the farmland as well. So at this one school, and this is just the workers, I don't have the information about the students, but just the employees, there were four of them who became ill from an application at this site. This is one, so you know, we saw a few of these incidents come by, and this one we actually went and visited and talked to the workers and the employer and the grower, or the applicator, the ag commissioner, and visited the site. It's a produce cooling facility. What they do is they bring in the fruit, berries mostly, from the fields, and they inspect them and then put them in the cold storage warehouse. And as you can see, this is in a, you know, Monterey County, Salinas area, kind of the, they call it the fruit basket of the country, I think. But it's, again, surrounded by fields. That's where the incident happened. It's right in that part of the property. They're separated from, this, in this case, it was a lettuce field that was being treated. It was about 15 feet away from workers. Workers are, you know, this is the canopy where the trucks pull in, and the workers are coming up and down here on the forklifts, and they work outside. And so it's just a 60,000, a huge operation, 60,000 square foot refrigerated cooler with, and out in the yard is a canopy and a pallet yard, and they're there during berry season. They're there till late at night, and they're receiving fruit, inspecting it, driving forklifts, just doing all kinds of accounting and walking around on the facility. So one night, a broom spray application lettuce. The lettuce field was being treated with six different products, and methomyl is a carbamate. That is the most highly toxic of the products that were used. The head commissioner said the lettuce field was a mess. They probably should have just disked it under. It wasn't worth salvaging mold and bugs. Methomyl is a restricted, California restricted material. And so per the notice of intent, the application was actually supposed to happen after midnight. It wasn't supposed to happen at 9 p.m. So they were at fault for that. So the forklift driver that was driving up and down the along the fence felt the spray on him. He washed his face and hands, and he went home. He didn't tell anybody of what happened. And other workers there did note an odor and felt ill, but not enough to notify any upper management or agencies. They just sort of, some of them talked to each other about it, but they didn't take any action. They didn't notify anyone. The worker who felt the spray, he went into work the next day, but said he felt ill. So they did send him in the next day. And 2 days later, they started talking to all of the employees, figured out which ones had symptoms, and they sent them to the doctor 2 days later. And they called the ag commissioner the day after the spray. Finally figured that out. Total of seven employees had symptoms, many different symptoms, are, you know, and some of these, the ones that are asterisks, we spoke to the employees about 2 months later. They were still having problems. They were still having loss of appetite. Some of them had lost weight, and they just felt ill still, abdominal pain and constipation, loss of appetite. So it went on for a while. You know, I don't think it was ever exactly determined why there was drift. The thought is, in that area, there's a prevailing wind, the coastal winds. Maybe that was the reason. The employees thought the tractor was going fast and thought maybe that, because that can help, that creates a lot of turbulence and could be a contributing factor. It is the applicator's responsibility to prevent drift. But, you know, you can't assume that that's always going to happen. That this, in this location, especially, they had a previous drift incident in 2007. So yes, it's the applicator's responsibility to prevent drift. But just like, you know, where I work, there's a facility next door that stores anhydrous ammonia. And so we have a contingency, you know, a shelter-in-place contingency, that if something happens to that tank and there's a release, then we need to be aware of it and react to that. So why wouldn't a facility that is surrounded by fields and it has had an incident before, you know, maybe they can add that to their illness and injury prevention program, or have planning and preparedness as part of their emergency action plan, which are both Cal OSHA regulations. That's kind of my premise for thinking that this can be added as, you know, this is your, you know, emergency response, the same way you would respond to, as I said, a release of something, a tank next door, or even your own tank. They have anhydrous ammonia on site because they are a refrigerated warehouse. So we kind of, when we wrote our report to them, one of our findings was, you know, preparedness on your part could have prevented some of this illness. You know, the first worker who noticed that there was an issue could have told everyone else and called management and had the ag commissioner out there and maybe even emergency responder and got people to a doctor right away, or at least use the drench shower to wash them off. You know, so this kind of planning can happen. What they can do is request from the ag commissioner to be notified when a notice of intent has been filed so that they know that there is going to be an application, that then they can tell the grower, we're going to have people on site at 9 o'clock, or they know who to call in case they know to call the grower or the applicator and have that contact information beforehand so that they can let them know you're drifting onto us and stop. And then developing emergency procedures, an alert system to notify each other, evacuation routes, where to go, get away further away from the drift, what kind of shelter, or maybe just going inside, closing the doors and turning off the ventilation. Knowing who to contact is important. You know, do you need to call 911, the ag commissioner, the applicator, the grower? What kind of decontamination procedures should you have? Having the safety data sheets and labels to first responders. One of the problems with this incident is that there were only two of those products that they had safety data sheets for to give to the doctor at the clinic the next day. And one of them was not, neither of them were methamyl. And then training the employees and training everybody on site what to do in case of an incident. A few weeks ago, and this is the second version of the California Environmental Health Tracking Program, and our sister branch in EHIB developed this great website, and it's based on use data. In California, all the pesticide use is reported to Department of Pesticide Regulation, so the tracking program mapped it. And this is the really important missing piece that we had, because we could say, yes, you're surrounded by fields, you should have this, you should have an emergency action plan in place to so you know what to do. But another piece of this is how much pesticides are actually used in your area is a valuable piece of information. So this is a really fun map to play with if you ever get a chance to go on site and try it. So back to the produce cooling facility, when you look at it, that's where they are. So if you look at the use map, you can see they're in the red zone, and that's the highest use. So, you know, this is a way that a location could determine whether they're at high risk or not, or higher risk than normal. This is that industrial park that where the employees said, yeah, we smell things all the time and we get headaches. So I went back and looked at all the dots that we had, that farm equipment supplier, you know, they have, you know, they don't, you know, so they have blocks that are dark red, high use near them as well. This is an elementary school in Madera County. Yeah, and it would be good if they use this map to cite locations as well. you know, thinking ahead, like putting a school in maybe the middle of the where the houses are would be better than putting it in the middle of the fields. And so recently there was another case, and it was a construction in California. They're building all these, they're calling them solar farms. And we've, you know, our branch has looked into solar farms before for other reasons, for coxie exposures. But this came up recently. There was one last year that involved 30 workers, and then this one was just a couple months ago. So I, you know, looked into this. I called them, called the egg commissioner and called the solar installer. It's a 12-acre site, and the workers there were sprayed with a ground-based air blast application, a mix of pesticides, and it was a pistachio orchard that was being sprayed. And so it drifted onto the construction workers. They actually felt mist on them and had, you know, vomiting and irritation. And so when I spoke to the egg commissioner, and they said definitely they need to know what to do. But when I spoke to the company, they were actually aware of this as a potential incident because of what happened at the solar farm workers the previous year. And so they actually do tailgate trainings on this as a potential issue. So they recognize that, yes, they are working in farmland surrounded by fields and that they need to train on this as well. So I'm not too far off in thinking that it's something that you could use to prevent pesticide illness. The only thing that the egg commissioner felt was that they just needed to have, I don't know if they called the right people right away, so I need to run our materials by them to see what they think. Other outreach possibilities are, well, you know, using Google Earth in the red zones, in areas where we know there's a lot of these kind of workplaces that are scattered around, and actually find them using Google Earth or Google Maps and send them the information using their address, their actual physical address, because you can kind of zoom around and find them. Targeting solar farm companies. I know Jason has some contacts there from some work they've done with coxie. And county ag commissioners might be able to help us distribute the outreach information. And other suggestions by the Fresno ag commissioner was utilities like PG&E and Southern California Edison, who are out in these areas, small crews working along roads, and high-speed rail crews, which they're starting to gear up for that, and they're also out in the middle of nowhere. Municipalities in rural areas, because some of the drift incidents we've had involve maintenance crews, and then schools would be a good place to outreach, and helping them plan some sort of, you know, shelter in place and notification planning. So we've developed a fact sheet, and the fact sheet is for employers. We highlighted our case report, and we have prevention points. One thing I'm going to add is the new and improved tracking website, and then having a poster. This is just an example. We've worked on a project before with Border Health about, you know, notifying, letting workers know who to call in case they had pesticide illness. So this would be a similar idea where, you know, who to call in case you have drift, and it could be customizable so that they can fill in their local information or their own management numbers. So that's basically it. So thank you.
Okay, we have about 6 minutes for questions.
Hi, thank you for this report. It's been years since I used to work in California, particularly the San Joaquin Valley. And back then, the relationship we had with the Ag Commissioners wasn't necessarily the most collaborative, but I was wondering whether or not, given the fact that you've got this great mapping tool now from EPHT, and you could potentially identify in advance locations at higher risk and see if the Ag Commissioner could be a door opener about promoting perhaps training that either they would do, preferably you guys would do, because their training would be less rigorous, I think, of empowering workers and employers in these adjacent plants. I mean, the idea, for example, at the fruit plant, at the fruit packing plant, having a little pole with a little windsock. It doesn't have to be an official airport windsock, but a little windsock is going to show whether there's a breeze and where it's coming from. Sure, there's always a breeze because you're on the coast.
Yeah.
But having something like that would cost probably less than $20 to put up. And just the whole idea, you can't know in advance necessarily, unless you have an army of staff, who all to offer this training to. But in partnership potentially with the Ag Commissioner, couldn't there be some sort of possibility? And maybe you would do a regional training or a county training so that you could either go worksite to worksite, but that's pretty intensive, but you might be able to do it on a little bit larger scale so that you could kind of educate people about what rights and responsibilities they have being on a plant or a physical location adjacent to an area where crops are going to be sprayed. The second comment, and I'll stop at this one, I apologize, is I can't imagine that they're doing solar farms next to fields that are spraying, because if you have a surfactant, it is sticky in nature to make something adhere. If it's at all at risk of going on to solar panels, they're going to reduce the effectiveness of solar collection, or solar generation, I should say, not collection. I have solar panels on my house and I have to clean them.
Yeah.
If you're using a surfactant, it's going to cause dirt and dust to make that much less efficient.
I don't know. Plus it's super dusty in the Central Valley. But he said they've got 30 projects. That one solar construction company had 30 projects this year that they're developing, and they do it on farmland that's marginal, and especially with the drought, a lot of farmland came to flood. So yeah, those are happening a lot more often. And with the Ag Commissioners, it depends on the county. They're all different, and there's sort of a love-hate relationship, mostly hate relationship going on with. A schools report came out a couple of years ago that DPR was not real happy about, and the Ag Commissioners are sort of their agents for doing investigations to look for violations of DPR's regulations, and they didn't. That was put out by our sister branch, by EHIB, and it was a great report, but it really created a lot of work for them and public scrutiny, so they're not super happy with CDPH, but we hope to keep, you know, we work with them and try to. I think they've got some great people, so. Yes. Thanks. We've tried to advocate for that statewide. Some counties do that sort of on a volunteer basis. And I think Kern County did. And I think it helped a lot, but
there used to be a system
we haven't.
Where you could do voluntary notifications. But that was over 30 years ago when I was there.
Yeah.
If you got on a list and you had an adjacent property owner who was going to spray, they could and would be required to let you know in advance. I don't know if that may have dropped out of favor, but that used to exist years ago.
Yeah, it's just some counties do it voluntarily. I know that'd be great, and you know, because now what they rely on is like signs. But unless you're right up on the property line, you know, you might not see it. Like, yeah, it'd be nice, but still, you know. So we're kind of approaching from the other angle. It's like, you know, you're next to a field, so have all your ducks in a row, so that if there is an incident, you can react to it right away. Because even the best planned application, you know, if the wind comes up, That happens a lot. It could go wrong. Or if a tarp blows, or if it's a fumigation where they've got it tarped, if the tarp blows off, you're going to get drift. And we feel that most of them, I don't know about most, but a lot of this goes unreported. So we're only hearing about maybe the more serious incidents. But that's where, when we heard from that one incident where they said, yeah, it happens, you know, we smell weird things all the time and we get headaches. But, you know, they just live with it. And it'd be better if they reported it. So at least everyone was aware of how much drift is actually going on. But I don't think they knew who to report it to. Any other? All right. Thank you.